Memories of gardens stretch back as far as I can remember. The smell of mulch and grass clippings always takes me right back to my grandparents' house in Liverpool, New York. My grandfather's green thumb made whatever he planted grow with vigor. Trees, grass, shrubs, flowers. In the gardens from my own houses growing up, I remember gorgeous bearded irises, amongst many other plants. And these irises were so tall, my sister and I marveled at their size, which was taller than either of us. Now, we were probably only about this big, but in our minds, these irises were gargantuan. And I remember my dad planting vegetables and making trellises for our cucumbers and showing me how to make little furrows in the soil so I could plant the beans. When my husband and I were planning our wedding, I insisted that my bridal bouquet be made from my mother's flower garden, which rivals anything you'd find in a garden magazine. And then there are the gardens that I always grew, or tried to grow, in containers on the porches and the patios of various apartments that I lived in, until finally I had a yard where the grass grows less and less and less every year. I simply can't imagine not having a garden. It's like breathing, a basic human need. I've always sought to create some sort of botanical sanctuary wherever I live. The simple act of planting, even if it's just one geranium in a pot, is centering. In the beginning, I just wanted to make a pretty space to sit and enjoy a cup of coffee in the morning or relax with a book at the end of a long day. But over time, as so often happens in life, my perspective shifted. I still love the simple beauty of a garden. I can't imagine looking at my house without seeing it framed in flowers. But as time has gone on, I've realized there are many life lessons to be learned from a garden. In the garden, I now experience what it means to have faith. To me, the very act of planting is an act of faith. Faith that this tiny seed or this seedling that I plant and water and tend will actually grow. And in the garden, I have hope. Even if Chepek Shad's gardener's prayer is not answered and that magic guano does not fall from the sky, I have hope that a lack of rain or too much rain or a lack of heat or too much heat won't harm the tender plants in my care. I have hope that they will continue to thrive and that what I can do can help them will be enough. And in the garden, I have joy when, oh my goodness, the bulbs that I planted last fall really did come up this spring. And in the garden, I also learn to have patience. No flower will bloom before its time, and as eager as I am to see each bud form, sometimes I just have to wait. And patience is not one of my virtues. However, the garden reminds me that it is something that I need. And in the garden, I learn to have perseverance. Life always presents us with challenges, both large and small. The garden teaches me that we can carry on, even under the most difficult of circumstances. I have a stunning Asiatic lily in my front garden bed, and it has been battling a lily beetle for the past few years. I've done my best to help battle the beetles, flicking them off into little cups of soapy water, but I can't get them all. And I don't want to cover the plant in pesticides, lest I harm other more beneficial insects. The leaves on my poor plant end up partially eaten, as do the blooms. Yet, despite all this trauma, it blooms nonetheless and returns again next year. It doesn't give up. And this spring, when we had so little rain, and after a winter with no snow, I wondered how my garden could possibly make it. Yet, my perennials still came up, and lo and behold, they bloomed. They weren't as full or as lush as they've been in the past, but they were still there, doing their best, despite their harsh conditions. And if I do say so myself as a proud gardener, they are looking quite lovely. And isn't that what we do too? Whatever adversity we face, we carry on. Not always as full or as vibrant as before, and maybe sometimes with a few holes, but we remain, getting through those tough times and carrying on, continuing to bloom and living out our potential. And the garden also provides a sense of wonder and awe. My daughter, Maddie, loves to plant sunflowers. She says she does it accidentally or secretly, and every year she plants several. Her favorites are the mammoth kind, the ones that grow really, really tall, even to a grown-up. And no matter how many seasons of sunflowers we go through, I never cease to be amazed and awed by their sheer size, which sprang from such a tiny seed. Now, I understand the science behind plants. I mean, I am a UU, and how they grow, photosynthesis, xylem and phloem, et cetera, et cetera. But their growth in the garden every year amazes me nonetheless, and sometimes even seems, dare I say it, miraculous. And in the garden, I am constantly reminded of how very interconnected we and all life on our planet really are. The garden forces us to literally connect with the earth. I reconnect with my garden and with the earth in which it grows every spring. I start by treating myself to a new pair of garden gloves, something pretty that will protect my oh-so-delicate hands and keep the dirt from getting under my fingernails while I tend to my house's floral frame. And then I get to work, gloves on. Kneeling pad in hand, I reacquaint myself with my garden friends, all my plants. Dig here, dig there, move a plant or two, pull up some weeds, and then when it seems like the work is done, I wash up, I put everything away. And after I clean up, I like to take a walk around the yard to enjoy the fruits of my labor and take in the beauty of the garden as it begins its spring awakening. Wait a minute. What's that I see over there? Oh, stray weed. Ugh, I don't have my gloves on now, but I'll just pull this one. And then as I walk around and my view shifts around the plants, I notice another weed or a flower that I forgot to deadhead, and oh, this won't be a big deal. I'll just pull one more, oh, and one more, oh, and one more. Well, inevitably, soon enough, I'm on my hands and knees, crawling around, hands filthy, dirt under my nails, dirt on my knees. But it's only now, when I'm covered in dirt from crawling in amongst the plants, and when I've been literally baptized by soil, that I feel truly connected to my garden and to the earth and all that it supports and sustains. There is something about touching the soil and really getting my hands dirty that makes me feel, for lack of a better word and pun fully intended, grounded. I go through this same routine every year. Why do I even bother with gardening gloves? We create so many barriers between ourselves and the very earth that we walk upon. We cover it in pavement, sidewalks, floors, decks, patios. We wear sandals. We wear shoes. We wear garden gloves. But in the garden, where inevitably our hands end up covered in life-giving soil, that barrier is broken, and we are connected to our Mother Earth once again. And that connection goes beyond just us, the soil, and the plants. Unitarian Universalists have a set of 7 value statements, principles, and purposes around which we align our religious commitments. They can be found in the back of your order of service if you're a newcomer or you just need a refresher. And in the garden, whether it be flower or vegetable, we live out our 7th principle: respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. In the garden, we weave, are part of the web. And in doing so, we support the bees, the butterflies, the worms, the spiders, the birds, all the creatures that either make their homes in or take their sustenance from what we have cultivated. And this love and care for the interdependent web is something that I am cultivating in my children as I am cultivating my garden. One summer, our love and care for the interdependent web became quite literal. A spider created a beautiful web between our back porch and our herb garden. It was magnificent. Every morning, the kids and I went out to check on our spider friend and see what it had caught for breakfast. We marveled that it would recreate this web every day, eating, digesting, recycling, and reusing its fine spider silk. The kids fiercely guarded that web for their spider friend. When one of the neighborhood kids accidentally destroyed it, you would think that we had lost a favorite relative. And we've had worm rescue missions after rainstorms to make sure that the worms can get safely back to the soil and carry on their work of digesting and aerating. And the same goes for the various beetles and caterpillars that find themselves on our driveway or our front walk in the hot, hot sun. Butterfly bush outside our dining room window is finally reaching its full height and is in bloom. Every autumn, I prune it down to almost nothing, and then in the spring wait, impatiently, Remember, my garden is teaching me to be patient. And I wait until midsummer when it finally is tall, and I'm amazed again that it grew 6 feet tall and is bursting with purple-violet spikes. The bush is a magnet for, of course, butterflies, but also other pollinators and hummingbirds, all to the delight of my children. And many a dinner gets interrupted by cries of, "Hummingbird!" And then we need to pause in our meal and then go to the window and watch as the tiny bird darts from plume to plume, sipping the nectar. And our dill plants are often a favorite of a gorgeous black, white, and yellow caterpillar that seems to return every year. We're always hoping that we'll get a chance to see one form a chrysalis so that we can see what kind of moth or butterfly it will become. And while I don't want all of my dill to be eaten by this caterpillar, it's hard not to marvel at its beautiful colors and wonder how it knows where to find us every year. We have several planters on our back deck. I like the look of sweet potato vines draping down over the sides. But the thing is, there's also some little critter that really likes the sweet potato vines for their taste. And we usually end up with these lovely draping stems and no leaves. This happens every year. Now, other gardeners would just be like, okay, no more sweet potato vines. But I can't do that. For some reason, I feel compelled to keep feeding the mystery critter because it too is part of the web. We also have a few high bush blueberry bushes in our backyard. The berries rarely make it to the kitchen. Most of the time, they are eaten by the birds and the squirrels and the other small animals that share our small patch of land, including the small humans, my children and their friends. And we're always hopeful that the milkweed that grows in the front of our house, in amongst the purple cone flowers, will provide a resting place for a monarch butterfly. We have yet to see one, but the hope remains. Sometimes my garden has a mind of its own, almost as if it's trying to remind me that while I am the gardener, it is the boss. You know, that interdependence thing, it cuts both ways. Dill has been popping up everywhere. Everywhere, that is, but where I had originally planted it. And I had a spectacular patch of columbines that this spring somehow moved themselves completely to a different part of the garden. In fact, it was a part of the garden that wasn't really working for me and was looking a little empty, so I'm actually really happy with where they ended up, and I'm hoping that they'll agree with me and grow there again next spring. And the interdependent web goes on and on. As gardeners, we often share our plants with our gardening friends and family members, and they with us. And as we continue to add to our botanical collection, each garden walk becomes a reminder of the rich tapestry of our lives and all of the connections and the interconnections that we share. My daughter is a fourth-generation gardener. She said to me once, "You garden because of your mom, and I garden because of my mom. And my mom gardens because of her father, my grandfather." My daughter has a plant in her garden that originally came from my grandfather's garden. So we stay connected in the garden.